This week on the BOAG World Show, we're joined by Chris Coyer to discuss his daily work life as founder of CSS Tricks and CodePen. This week's show is sponsored by Optimal Workshop and the Digital Project Manager. Hello and welcome to the BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG, as you probably already heard because he spoke over me the immediate moment I opened my mouth is Marcus Lillington.
I could have with that, Paul. I was about a nanosecond before. There would have been a gap if I'd zoomed into the nth level. I could have edited me out of that bit.
Okay, well, but let's just... let's just start the episode as unprofessionally as we mean to go on. And in addition to Marcus Lillington, we have the very wonderful Chris Coyer joining us. Hello,
Chris.
Oh,
the very wonderful. Thanks so much, Paul. You're very wonderful, too.
Well, they're mutual loving, should we? So, for those of you who don't know Chris, he does an excellent podcast that I highly recommend called Shop Talk. If you haven't listened to it already, chances are if you listen to this show at some stage or another, you also listen to Chris's show.
Well, I'm sure it's likewise. He's got double the seasons on us at least. BOAG World, maybe the first podcast I ever listened to, maybe?
I don't know. Well, cool. It was the first web design podcast. So that, we get props for being early, if not quality.
So it's quantity.
Quantity over quality every time.
We're certainly over 500 episodes now.
That's scary, isn't it? But you're up to what, 372, something like that? I saw.
Yeah, we're in the mid threes, so we're up. We're old too. It's cool. We can be in the old club.
Yeah.
Don't even start there. I'm feeling very old at the moment.
Oh, I'm on crutches, so I win.
How did you end up on crutches?
I was just at the gym and we were doing little shuffle exercises or something. I was going a little too fast and just did it. And then of course you're sitting there with an ice pack on you, and everybody at the gym has their own advice for you. You gotta drink electrolytes, that's the only way.
There is a lesson there, isn't there?
Never do exercise.
Don't go to the gym.
Never.
There is, there's something to be said about that.
So, for people who don't know you, Chris, do you want to just introduce yourself a little bit and say a little bit about what it is that you do for a living these days, which we're going to come on to in a lot more detail, but kind of give us the top level.
Yeah, I see that's kind of a part of the, I like this series that you got going here. That's really smart. But anyway, I like you mentioned, I have a podcast too, Shop Talk Show, which is kind of the, I think we might get to this, but it's sort of like the smallest thing I do these days as far as bill paying kind of thing, but it's still worth doing and kind of a big part of it, because everything that I do revolves around front end web development and doing it, but also talking about it and helping other people learn it and kind of being a talking head or like a web design pundit or something in a way. Like they don't have become on CNN yet, but those days are coming, I think.
No, good. No, carry on.
Well, I kind of just write about it. So I have a 10-year-old blog, really, called CSS Tricks. And it's a little bit more than a blog because we have, screencasts there and, forums and snippets and, an almanac section that kind of documents the features of CSS that I sort of keep up to date and curate on kind of a daily basis. So it's a little bit more than a blog. It's just a site, css-tricks.com. And that's been a big part of my career, at least over the last 10 years, which is about how long it's existed. It didn't, not out of the gate, it wasn't, but it was halfway through at least, it started to be okay, this is definitely a part of my career, and it definitely still is to this day. And then the biggest thing I work on is CodePen, which is kind of a full-blown company at this point where We have a staff, and you know, it's a web app for, you know, you play with front end code there. You build things with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. It's mostly a front end kind of outfit, and you know, you log into it, so you have an account, and it's a little bit like Dribbble. If there's a lot of designers who watch the show, or you can follow each other and like each other's work and comment on each other's work, and it's kind of a social coding environment, we call it. And there are pro plans for CodePen, which everybody please sign up for. I mean, it's mandatory, actually.
I heard that, you know, everybody has to do it. If you want to be called a professional web developer.
The words CodePen and we're looking at it were used in the office today.
Oh, that's great.
Looking at it. How behind the times the headscape.
I know. Well, there's got paywall. Paywall's coming. just so, kidding, it's absolutely not. But you know, that's the thing. It's a more of a full blown business. Then CSS Tricks has a part time staff of absolutely wonderful people that work with me, but the CodePen is a full time staff. It's a real business, Paul. We really did it.
Yeah. So I mean, this is what you've done there is kind of hit on the premise of the entire season. In case you missed the first episode, because we're pretending this is the second one of the season, even though we're recording it first. If you missed the first episode of the season, the premise of the season is that
I missed episode of the season, Paul. When's that happening?
You have. I've missed the first episode of the season.
I'm saving up for my Happy New Year's for Friday.
Exactly. I know. It's all back to front, isn't it? It's horrible doing them out of order. It's my wife's fault. We'll blame her.
I blame her.
So the premise of the season is there's all these people that are out there doing jobs that are really hard to define. And one of the most common questions I get asked all the time is, so what is it that you do? And not just by people that don't work in digital. You can kind of understand them not asking. I get it asked by, you know, developers and designers, because so many of us, our careers have gone in these kind of unusual and weird directions. So that's what I want to explore as the season. And of course, the other thing is that we have to work very closely with lots of different people and lots of different disciplines. And, you know, it's good to understand what it is that they do and how they operate. So that's what I want to get into a little bit. And we thought we'd kick off with Chris because, to be honest, if I'm honest, I was nosy about what Chris was doing these days. And I thought, if I pretend it's an interview, he might actually tell me. So that's what we'll be doing.
Sure. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, what a great idea for a show. Everybody is having a little bit of you know, whatever level you're at, people have a little bit of an identity crisis of being able to explain.
Yeah.
I mean, good luck being able to just do it to a random person in public. I mean, oh my gosh.
Go on then.
They might have the same problem with you. Yeah, well, what do I do?
How do you describe what you do to your mum?
Yeah, well, you know, they latch on sometimes to big moments that are easy to define. So if you publish a book, they get that. Everybody gets that. Oh, you wrote a book. And then I reflect on the things that I've done. It's not that I'm not proud of that. That was cool. I'm glad I did that. But it was, you know, a tiny fraction of my actual output, you know. That's weird. I don't seem to downplay it. I wouldn't want somebody to be listening to this and being like, writing a book is nothing. No, it's something. It's just, it's complicated. Anyways, but more
only,
like...
It doesn't count very much if only about four people read it, which is what happens when I publish a book. So, you know, it can only go so far. It's not like we're writing the next Harry Potter, are we?
No. It's very niche. Everything we do is so niche. Anyway, so sometimes we're talking to each other in a way, and we build products for the world and then only talk to each other. It's funny. So, project management to some degree, you know, a lot of my day is, you know, the actual work day is CodePen stuff because I'm one of the co-founders there. So we need to, every day we're in Slack and we're talking and figuring that out. And then I'm talking to my founders and we're figuring out the direction of CodePen. What is it that we're doing here? What's important? What matters? Because you have to make these, unfortunately, you have to make kind of high level decisions. Like, I think these highly paid employees of our, you know, like specialized smart people that work with us. We need to like put them to work in the most efficient way because we've made the choice as a business to hire these people because they're amazing at what they do. Let's make sure that they're guiding our group vision to where we want to go with this. And that's like tricky stuff. That's like, it's one thing to wake up and answer an email. I do that stuff too. But then you have to be like, well, I also have to think of grand plans for us and make sure that I'm shepherding people in that direction the best I can. And they have the tools that they need to do those things and they're not blocked on things and that type of stuff. That's hard. You know, you couldn't be sitting on a plane next to somebody and be like, what do you do? And be like, oh, I shepherd people. I unblock them.
That's quite a good description. I like that.
That's not, yeah.
So what do you say to the people on the plane? This is what I want to know.
Oh,
what do you describe as your job?
Well, I have tried to stay away because, I mean, you've done client work forever. I don't do – so I can't say I build websites because that immediately means like, oh, I have a brother who needs a website kind of thing.
Which is
I don't mind. Like I don't – that's – I'd just be like, I just don't do client work kind of thing. It's not that big of a deal. But I try to avoid that, and so I tend to lean on the, like, I talk about – or I teach it sometimes. I'll say that because I don't think that's entirely inaccurate. Like, I teach people how to make websites better. Like, and people seem to be somewhat satisfied with that.
You don't ever describe yourself as a tech startup or an entrepreneur or anything. You don't see yourself in that kind of way?
I've tried to lean into that a little bit more. I feel like entrepreneur used to like rub me the wrong way in some way because I'm like, I don't feel like I'm a, you know, I think of entrepreneur and then I think of like modal overlays trying to get email addresses. Like I can't separate the idea of like cheesy growth hacking and entrepreneurialism. They're just like attached. But I'm like, no, I am, I guess. Because I realize that everything I think about all day is like, I'll flip through a magazine and be like, that's a great idea. They should do X, Y, and Z with, you know, like, or, my wife will be like, I'm thinking about brewing kombucha. I'm like, let's register a business immediately. What's the label going to look like for the bottle, you know? And not everybody is like that. So I'm like, maybe I am an entrepreneur, I guess.
Well, I mean, the chat room seems to have decided you are a web shepherd and have even reduced your job title down to two emojis, which is pretty impressive. So
I see the spider web.
So that's sorted. Spider web and sheep emoji. There you go. Everything you need. Okay, before I dive into some of the questions in more detail, I just want to pause very quickly and I was about to say get our first sponsor out of the way, but it doesn't go down well with sponsors when you talk about getting them out of the way. But I do just want to quickly mention our sponsors for this season. We got some great sponsors for this season, and we're going to start with Optimal Workshop. Optimal Workshop are one of those tools that if you work in any area of UX, you've probably already come across them. But it's so easy just to forget about these different tools that are out there. And actually, Optimal Workshop is a brilliant tool for running fast and affordable user research, right? So they've got a whole, I say tool, it's a whole suite of tools, right? So you sign up for Optimal Workshop and you get tree testing for your information architecture. You can do first click testing, which is absolutely invaluable. You can do card sorting. I was using it for card sorting only the end of last year. Sounds like ages ago now, doesn't it, when you say the end of last year? You can do it for things
ago.
All 9 days ago. You can do online surveys. It's not 9 days ago, Marcus, because this is the second episode of the season.
Well, we're sometime in April now, aren't we?
Yeah, something like that. You could do qualitative research in it. You can even test whole real prototypes. So it's a very powerful tool that really is a kind of essential part of my arsenal, which is why I asked them if they were willing to come on the show. So I've just got distracted by the fact that you can actually buy a domain name for Web Shepherd. There you go, Chris. You can register the domain name. Somebody's just suggested it in the chat room.
Yeah,
I see. So not only... Yeah. Not only do they have this huge number of incredible tools, they also offer participant recruitment, which is absolutely invaluable, because let's face it, that is the worst part of user research. It's not doing the research itself. It's finding the frigging people to do the research with you. And so they've got like participants over 70 different languages from a pool of 10 million participants. I don't even know how they do that. That must be some magic of some description. So you could create your own panel of whatever kind of people that you want. Go and check them out for yourself. You can find out more about them by going to boag.world/optimal. And thank you very much, guys, at Optimal Workshop for supporting the show. Right.
I have to confess to not knowing about Optimal Workshop, Paul.
You're kidding me.
No. So I'm going to have to
really
blag a login from you and have a play.
I don't have a login. I pay for that out of my own money. It's shocking me paying for something. I know. Incredible. The chat room are disgraced.
You have tools that you use for things like that, and that's not one of them. So, hey, I'll have to check it out.
Right. Now, this is the point in the podcast where we start to get personal and dig into ask Chris lots of inappropriate questions. Right. So, I want to. Right, we've talked about, I do all of these things, and I teach people and shepherd them and all this kind of stuff. Where do you make your money, Chris? Because that's where the rubber hits the road. Where, you know, what actually pays your salary at the end of the day? Is it is it CodePen? Is it CSS tricks? Where does it come from?
It's mostly those two things. So, I mean, I'm a founder of CodePen, and we're a profitable business, and I'm a founder of it. So we, all three of us founders, and every employee just has a salary, and it's just a normal tech salary, probably low for as many years as I've been in tech and as deeply as I've tried to hit it, you know, be like, I feel like there's probably a world in which that I bounce to some big megacorp and make a heck of a lot more money than I do now. You know, I have no interest in that. I will happily run CodePen forever. But that's just to say that I don't like run this little startup to deliver myself some monster salary. That's not happening.
No. Sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, that's all. I just mean if I had the money to pay myself more money, I'd hire more devs, because I think it's really fun to work with people, and it's amazing to see them help execute vision, you know, not to be too vague. But.
And there's also something quite satisfying, and something I miss from when I used to run Headscape with Marcus. There's something quite satisfying about, like, I'm paying somebody's salary. I'm enabling them to feed their family and giving them a good work environment. I kind of miss that a little bit, because that was always very satisfying. So the other thing that I wanted to... So you make some money from CodePen and the pro accounts of that. So with CSS Tricks, does your income come from advertising, or is there other aspects to that?
No, not anymore. At one point, I was like, maybe we'll slow down then. Because there's been ads really on CSS Tricks forever, you know, since maybe not the first second it came out. But that, even in the early days of CSS Tricks, like literally when nobody was reading it, it was just like a dumpy little dumb blog where I was like, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. But, you know, every blog has a humble beginning, I would think.
And, yeah, of course.
And even then, part of the motivation for doing it at all was like, I'm going to put Google AdSense on this thing. I want beer money from it. And if I can write one article that gets a few hundred hits or whatever, maybe I really can make $15 a month. And that would be spectacular. Because, I was a little entrepreneurial, I guess. You know, I was kind of like, it'd be nice to supplement my income, especially in a way that I found fun. Like, I think, like, I still find to this day, like, little ways to extract money from the internet is kind of fun. I will, like, if I read a book and I honestly like it, I probably will use my Amazon affiliate link in my tweet. Because I might make $6. And it might
the same.
I just think that's kind of fun. And so it does. There's ads on CSS. Just literally the I guess the kind that most people think of, display ads. There's some of that. And then there's once a week, if we can sell it, there's a sponsored post, which is kind of nice. And that was a idea of like, if display ads die, which they're always being fought and against. So, you know, you never know what that market's going to be like. That goes, I mean, over the course of display advertising history is crazy. I would love to read a book about that. Huge highs, lows. And, I know, you never want to, you know, when you're entrepreneurial, you kind of try to watch your risk level to some degree. And I thought, well, why not these sponsored posts? These are not normal display ads. They're just a blog post. You know, they just go out into the feed with everything else. And they're marked as such, but they give us some freedom of how we want to, you know, approach the content in there and stuff. And that's been pretty good, too. And then there's just other, you know, every deal I book, I tend to not have luck with, like, networks. Like, I don't run AdSense on CSS Tricks because it just doesn't, work. Like, it probably worked to some degree. It would make some money, but it would be much lower and the ads would be much grosser and it just wouldn't be as nice as what I'm able to do by doing a little hand management of it. And through the years of whatever, speaking at conferences and just being involved in the industry, I have enough connections, I think, and know people at businesses that that I tend to be able to pitch sometimes and be like, hey, we're looking, we have a opening for a sponsor at CSS Tricks. This is the type of thing that I can do for you. These days, I could deliver you a package that's across Shop Talk Show and CodePen and CSS Tricks and kind of roll it all together. And that seems to be resonating with some companies. They like multiple touch point kind of thing. And so sometimes, I guess that's the more normal thing these days, is to roll together a package for a slightly bigger company and deliver that. And so that's cool. And that pays some of my CSS Tricks salary, too. That's not really a salary. I just own that. So I just am able to take payouts from it when I'm able to, if it's doing okay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So do you find that you're different? So you've got these three kind of pillars to your business. You've got your CodePen, you've got CSS Tricks, and to some extent Shop Talk, right? I know Shop Talk doesn't make you a huge amount of money, but do you find they'll feed off of one another? So I presume do you view Shop Talk as primarily a marketing tool, or is it just for fun, or, you know, how does it all fit together, or does it?
Sometimes I think of it as like an excuse almost, that like it is valuable and worth doing, but it's an excuse to talk to my friend Dave, and we always have good conversations. And I think I grow from that, and it keeps me connected in cool ways. And there's a lot of listeners to Shop Talk Show, so we hear from them sometimes. People are sending us in, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? That fuels my understanding of the industry, which is pretty valuable. So, you know, it's, and then, you know, when I deliver a package to a company, I say, we have this podcast and these display ads and stuff. And it makes the package look juicier, and it is juicier, frankly. So it's just not, you know, even though I just couldn't, you know, I sometimes fantasize, like, what does Shop Talk Show full time look like? You know, could we be the, you know, take this really big and spend a week per show just with tons of interviews and lots of editing and make this like a incredible story kind of thing. That sounds fun, but I think even at the high end there, this is such a niche. Even podcasting is a niche, and then to be a niche of a niche is like, I just don't think the money is there to make it full-time possible. So I think we're seeing most podcasts be just serve their niche and have it mostly be a side project. And there's a handful of big dogs that are managed, you know, and the topics for those are generally comedy and just general storytelling that not everybody can compete in that general.
Sounds quite familiar to me.
Yeah, that does.
The story, the description, the why you do it, all of those things sound very familiar. I mean, I guess we've always said that there is an element of marketing to this. Of course there is, but it has got to the point now that we just like kind of having a chat every week. It's even better now. We're doing it live, and we've got all of the other people having a chat as well. So
I reflected on, you know, the certain things you do just have intangible benefit that you can't imagine pulling away from yourself. I was doing a wrap-up post for CSS Tricks. We called it Thank You 2018 Edition. I do it every single year at the turn of the year, where I, instead of getting sappy, I save that for the middle of the year. And I just hardcore analytical look at how we did on CSS Tricks through the year, mostly based on, or whatever data I can get my hands on. A lot of Google Analytics in there, and like WordPress dashboard data stuff, and weird just like how many posts did we publish kind of data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so looking in Google Analytics, where does our traffic come from? Because that's, you know, if there's no traffic on CSS Tricks, it's dead. It really does matter how much traffic we get on the site. We had a good year that way, and fully 2% of that, all of that traffic came from all social media combined. Twitter, Facebook, all that, all that stuff. So you're like,
only 2%?
2%. You know, and the rest of it, it wasn't because search went crazy or something. Search is a lot, but it's in the 80s, low 80s. So that's super important. Mm-hmm. That was even lower than it has been in the past. So the search is coming more from referral sources and things like that. And it just got me thinking, like, we spend way a lot of time on social media. I feel like it's half my day sometimes if I'm doing a really bad job of just like listening and watching and saving tweets and participating when I can. For 2% of traffic instead of spending my time, you know, but then I think, oh my God, I feel like half my ideas come from that sometimes. And, you know, if I'm not connected to the industry, then what am I, you know, like, so it's, I don't know. It matters still, even though it's not, but it does need some balance.
That's interesting.
So there'll be some people that are listening to this that are going, oh, that sounds like a very nice life you've got there going there, Chris. You know, a nice little variety of things to keep you entertained. You've spread the risk of your business with different revenue streams. I like the sound of what you do. The big question is, how did you get here? You know, how did you get to this point in your career? You know, and I recognize a lot of it will be chance and luck and all of those kinds of things. But I'm quite interested
privilege
in the journey.
Too. Don't forget that one. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
I didn't struggle. I didn't climb over any mountains to get here. You know, it wasn't handed to me, but there was no major blocks in the way from it. For starting with my parents and making sure I had whatever computer I wanted pretty much and were happy to let me sit there and do computer stuff. You know, thank God for them and the people that I was around and showing me people in life that took that computer and did work with it. It wasn't just a toy. You know, I had like my brother's friend was named Steve Raffle, and you know, I haven't talked to Steve in ages, but he was like a nerd. He's, you know, he lived with my brother and he just sat at his computer all the time. But once in a while I'd go in there, hey, look at this, and it was like some incredible visualization of like a game that he was working on. And he went on to found Raven Software, which made, you know, these days makes Call of Duty and like
In the early days,
made Heretic and Hexen and some of these, like, they were like Doom.
Yeah,
games,
I remember. Yeah.
That's him, you know, and I'd look and I'd be like, he's having fun with it. He's just being an introvert and just typing away at keys in his keyboard, which is highly appealing to me, and then was highly successful over it too. So it's not like I was like, I woke up every day, I want to be like Steve, but I think just being around that.
Yeah.
Idea of you can have fun with your computer and make money doing it. It just seemed like obvious to me. Like, that's it. It's locked in. That's what I'm going to do with my life. So today is just an extension of that. And I had other friends. I have this friend named Jeff Campana, who's a wonderful ceramic artist. And we had in high school, we had a great ceramic artist studio in our high school, which is a little bit rare. It wasn't just one pottery wheel in the corner. There was like 12 wheels and a whole outdoor kiln set up, and it was great.
Wow.
And Jeff just took to it. You know, he was good at it, and then something just clicked in his head, and he's just like, well, that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And there was no question about it. He was an artist, and he worked in clay, and that's that. And to this day, he's just, that's it. And shuffles him around a little bit, whether he's teaching it or just making a lot of work and selling it or doing residencies. But the clay thing is like, that's locked in forever. And I feel similar to that. I'm like, this like computer stuff, like where design hits development stuff is me, and that's it. That's all I got.
You know? So you don't go from that to being this entrepreneur and running these multiple successful projects all simultaneously. I presume you had a proper job once.
I did, sure. Well, you leave college and you're like, well, I'm a worthless human. I didn't learn anything. What am I going to do with myself? to getting a job where, you know, in the U.S. I made like $25,000 a year, you know, whatever that translates to, but very crappy job just doing production work on like an insert for a newspaper that was like for washing machines and refrigerators and stuff. And I still vividly remember what all my duties at that job, and you just level up slowly, you know, because now you're doing it for real. So people, you know, and then I bounced from that to doing more print work and at other companies, finally get a web job, because I knew even when I was working those jobs, I'd be like, can I make your website? You know, can I make my website for my band? And, you know, doing it's a typical story, you know, I feel like half of websites are for your college band or whatever. But I just knew all along, always, that computers is my thing. I get off work, working on my computer, and just sit right back down on my computer and do stuff. That's just what I like to do. I was introverted. I didn't even know that's what I was at the time. I thought I was broken, practically. Like, this nerd just only wants to spend time with himself. Because I had it's not like I'm not normal. It's not like I don't enjoy the company of some others. I had close friends, and then friends of friends, and people who like to go out and do normal things. But I would do some degree of that, and then I'd immediately retreat, like, bye, everybody, computer time, you know? And I just had friends that would accommodate that were okay knowing that about me, or because they were like that themselves in a way. And what my time in there, it wasn't always video games. You know, I played a little bit of games, but I'm not like a hardcore gamer. I was always working on some idea. I came across an old photo that I didn't even remember I had this idea, but years ago I worked the night shift at some stupid print job. I worked from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. 3 days a week. 12 hours, 3 days a week. So I had 4 days off, but I was a total night owl because I had to work straight through the night, you know? And I was like, this is my life now, so I need to figure out how to, like, go to the pharmacy and, like, what restaurants are open and stuff, because I'm only awake doing normal life things at very odd hours, you know, right in the middle of the night is when I'm awake. So I had this entrepreneurial idea called 24-Hour Madison. Madison was the city name that I was living at the time, where I would just have, like, this interactive map and business listings of all the stuff that's open 24 hours. So if you're like me and you work the night shift, which plenty of people do, and so I made the site, you know, and the photos was not only a photo of the website, but I made this print packet that I'd mail out to businesses that said, you know, for $50 or whatever it was something like that, I'll feature you on this site, put you listed on 24hourmadison.com to really capture, you know, you're open anyway, let's capture this overnight audience kind of thing. And I barely remember doing it because it was such a flop. You know, not as far as I know, not a single person ever responded to that kind of thing. The website was probably crap. You know, like, it just wasn't. But that's the kind of thing that I'd be working on. I wasn't like, let's play World of Warcraft. I mean, I played a little World of Warcraft. But for the most part, I was more interested in, you know, working on an idea, trying to execute some cockamamie scheme I had. You know?
So how did you make that transition from taking the salary home to you know, stepping away and becoming your own boss?
Well, I was like, you know, I get one proper web development-ish job, finally. And then, you know, my outside hobbies, they didn't dwindle, but they were like, I do so much web stuff at work that it's like, it's all just starts to melt together. And that's when I started CSS Tricks, and I was like, now I'm learning super fast. I'm a web professional now, apparently. So I started writing stuff on CSS Tricks. You put ads on the site. It starts making a little bit more money. Then I get invited because of CSS Tricks to speak at a conference. So now I'm like, I'm feeling really on top of the world because I'm a conference guy now. And then I start to get a little bit more known in the industry. I get a job offer from a startup that was WooFoo at the time. Go to work for them, and now I'm a startup kind of guy. And then just the ball keeps rolling. You know, WooFoo gets bought, so now I'm in Silicon Valley. And all the meanwhile, I'm still the introverted nerd who's coming up with schemes, computering all the time. So I'm just continuing to do that. CSS Tricks makes a little bit more money. Now we're at the hill point where I'm like, I could probably quit my job. It's not even that risky, because if I had all day to do my schemes, I could probably make some more money. It was a little risky, but not a disaster, because I could just go back to work. And I was single at the time. Yeah. No, you know. So I just did it. I remember I had this big Kickstarter I did where I asked CSS Tricks audience to give me money to redesign the site pretty much. And I said,
I remember that. Yeah.
I'll record it and give it to you if you back me. So it'll be the screencast series. Because people were hungry for screencasts back then. There wasn't that much of them like there is now. I don't think you could do it now because people would be like, there's more screencasts than I could possibly watch on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So why would I pay you for yours? I mean, if they're really good West Boss ones or whatever, sure. But like just for the like the low quality, like just follow along as I work kind of thing that I was producing at the time. It was amazing that people paid for it, but they did. And part of it was just like, thank you for existing kind of thing. You know, I think that everybody gets one of those there in their career at some point. And I cashed mine in and took some of that. And I made no money on it because you got to be careful with that stuff. You promise everybody a t-shirt and then you hire a bunch of people to help with your website. The money's immediately gone. So they look at this number. It was like 70 grand or something. They think, oh, you're rich now, bro. And you're like, between taxes and all the stuff I sent you, that cost me money.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, that's that. once you've kind of set up and you got going and just kind of move on to life for now, right? It's quite hard to imagine what your average day or average month looks like. Is there even such a thing as an average day for you?
I wish there was, you know. I think that's... it's not. Like, a, you know, to some degree there is, you know, like if we're just like deep in work on a feature at CodePen, I can come in and, you know, whatever, I can go to the gym in the morning and then just sit down and have the whole day and I work on the feature or maybe I write a blog post or something that's been on my mind and get that out the door, make sure everybody's happy at CSS Tricks and then deep dive into my feature. Because I'm not just a shepherd. I literally write HTML, CSS, and JavaScript for all of my sites. Personally, right. You know, like we have some staff now, but I'd love to grow to the point where I can step away from that. Not because I don't like coding, but I feel like, God, I've been deep in the trenches for so long. I'd love to have a break and just guide people instead, but I have not been that lucky so far. Anyway, I sit there and work on the feature and, you know, close bugs and make sure everybody's happy at CodePen and then, you know, maybe I'll send off a few more. I have to do a lot of planning work to do. You know, even the podcast takes a good bit of planning. So there's always like email breaks and social media breaks and stuff. And then go home. And that's that, you know. So but it feels good, though, because it feels a lot of times you're working on something bigger that's going to take a long time to get done, which is sometimes not satisfying to end your day if you started and ended it with something that's not going to see the light of day for a long time. That's why blogging is so satisfying to me. I can start a blog post, finish it, and ship it and be like, that feels like I, you know, whenever I send something to the world, it's highly satisfying to me, you know.
So it's a mixture of coding, writing. I presume selling advertising and that kind of thing and interacting with those kinds of admin stuff. What about all the financial side of your business? Do you just kind of give that to someone else to do or are you
I've had part-time employees in the past and now my wife helps me with a lot of it. And, you know, and I'm involved there to some degree. And then taxes we have a company for and stuff. It's not as streamlined perhaps as but the both of us would like it to be. But we're getting there, you know. I don't think we need a full-time accountant just yet, you know.
No. So do you have any kind of routine to your day? You know, you talked about, you know, get up and go to the gym. Do you do that every day? Do you start the day with emails or how's it work?
Yeah. I mean, I usually answer the easy emails before I'm even out of bed in the morning, you know.
Isn't that funny? Emails. I always wait for emails. They're the one thing that I don't look at in the morning.
Oh, really?
I'll check out the news, I'll read articles, but emails, I'll see what's come in. If it's anything like, oh, I better look at that, then I will. But generally, it's like, no, they wait till I sit down to my desk.
I'm going to get on an interview sometime, because this is yet another cockamamie idea I have is this... I made email-is-good.com because I find email just fascinating. I do so much email and I love email and I feel like it's the gateway to like every good thing that's ever happened to me. Every time I've ever been invited to a conference or landed a deal or had an idea or hired somebody or everything, it all happens over email. Why do people hate it so much? You know, it's like amazing.
I don't.
No, you don't. Good. But a lot of people do, and a lot of people are overwhelmed by it, and a lot of people have, don't manage it well and stuff. So the site isn't that fascinating yet, but it's kind of like every time I have some like idea or see some new app or something about email productivity, I've been kind of logging it at this site. So maybe someday I can turn it into a book or something. But what I really want to do is talk to people about how they manage their email and just find these threads that emerge, you know, find the deepest pain points for people at their email and figure out how to tack those, you know, because I think there's something here, you know, the email is not talked about enough, I don't think.
Anyway, well, all I know is that I don't think Marcus does manage his email. It just kind of explodes across the world. That's been my experience of Marcus and email, but I might be wrong.
I've told you also about my email, Paul. I'll tell you about it on our first episode.
Yeah, that's confusing.
How's that going to happen?
But look, the thing I wanted to say, which I think is interesting, is you're more of a morning person, Marcus. Well, I'm guessing Chris and myself are more nighttime people. So that first bit at the beginning of the day is when you're at your peak. So therefore, it's silly to waste it on email. I don't know whether I'm fair on this. Well, I couldn't do anything other than answer email before 10 o'clock because, you know, my brain doesn't trigger until then. But I might be wrong.
Yeah, it's a funny one.
See, there's interesting stuff here, too, because I think, you know, you've decided – through what you've said already, that I'm not going to give my best self to email. I mean, you heard yourself say it in a way, and that could be fine. But like, what if you did? Like, what if that was your? What if you decided that email is so important to my job that I'm going to throw all I got at this email thing? Because then you're like, I feel like when you're at your best with email, you're giving really good, really positive answers and trying to extract a little bit more from people. You're sending a lot of email because you're like, I have this idea. Like, what if we did this? Like, no pressure, but like, I have this idea. Go, you know, that type of thing. I feel like when you're at the point where your inbox is so well managed that all the stuff in there is really kind of good and you're the one now kind of puppet mastering your email and sending a lot more email. It's good. Good business things.
Wow. That's a can of worms. Yeah, you've blown my mind, Chris. I need to reevaluate my life priorities.
What you were saying though about good things happen in email, and also, you know, and when you it was more actually what you were saying about kind of when you finish a blog post and you send it to the world, you get a good feeling. If I put a lot of effort into a reply to a potential client or something like that, I get the same feeling from that. Email's great, Paul.
Good life hacks. Because when I'm really tired, I can still write stupid divs. You know, like, I don't know. But you have to decide who's going to get my worst self then, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very fair comment. I mean, Chris, it's been so fascinating talking to you. I think the one thing that's coming across again and again is which someone has actually almost said the same thing. There is this real enthusiasm and passion and positivity in the way that you talk and stuff. And you seem to kind of throw yourself into so many different things. How do you kind of focus, right? When you get enthusiastic about anything, I could do this thing on email, or I could do this, or I could do that. I come across a lot of people that have all these wonderful ideas but lack any focus. Now, you've obviously succeeded in that. You've got, you know, you can say these are the three things that I concentrate, or the two things, or whatever. How do you decide what to do and what not to?
Oh, that's great. It's hard. I mean, before I had the three things that I mainly work on, I had a lot more than that, and like really had to like just slaughter some of them out of my life to the dismay of some people that I was working with on those projects. Yeah. But, and then they would, you know, they would come back with something really reasonable. Like, why do you need to just slice yourself away? Can't you just like poke around at it when you have time? Like, why do you need to like excuse yourself from this thing that isn't, it's not like any of us getting paid from it or whatever. Like, no, it's a mental thing. I do need to.
Yeah.
I do need to say I'm off that thing. I don't work on it anymore because I needed to trim down. I was just having a hard time with how many different things that I do. And then even with my three things, once in a while, there will be a fourth thing. There'll be like a conference talk that I need to prepare for, or a book I'm writing, or some new blog, a stupid blog I've spun up. There's a questionable idea or something. And then you realize, oh, those things have a real cost to them. Even if you're very clearly, and I do this, be like, I'm taking the easiest way to do this. When I spun up Email Is Good, yeah. I'm not like going to handcraft a theme. I'm not hiring a logo designer for it. I'm going to spin this yeah. thing up. I'm not even going to – I picked a default WordPress theme because I was like, no, yeah. I'm not getting in there. This is about the content for me at the moment. Or with Shop Talk Show, I'm like, we're going to have an editor. We're going to empower that editor to – record sponsor spots. We're going to empower that editor, handle our sponsors directly for us, you know, and have him step up his role there. Every choice we can make on this show to make it easier and not dig into my mm-hmm. time, we're going to do. If somebody says, oh, I don't know, if it becomes more complicated to schedule a guest other than, and you probably know this from the show, it's amazing. You send like one email to somebody, you're like, how's Tuesday at noon for your podcast? Oh. They're like, fine, yeah. sure, it's great. I'm happy to do it. What the heck? Can you imagine being on radio and trying to book J.K. Rowling or whatever for your show? Be like, you have 6 minutes as I drive under a tunnel. That's it. For what we, it's easy to book stuff. But, you know, yeah. but everything.
Why,
it's a WordPress
site. This is why
site.
You're the first guest. This is yeah. why you're the first guest of the season, Chris, is because yeah. you were the easy one to
so
arrange.
So easy.
Understands.
Just send me an email and I say yes. It's easy. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Everything I do, I try to be like, what's the easiest thing to do this? And even in our big work at CodePen, we're always like, can we write a test for this so it doesn't break? We're spending too much time on this particular thing. How can we avoid that? Like, this feature isn't used that much. Can we slice it away to remove technical debt? Be like, it's not just little choices that you make on your personal projects. All your work is benefits from this, like, what's the, like, the least amount of effort I can do here, or can I spend a lot of effort to make sure it's low effort later, is just good. You know, it's just a forever fight.
Do you have plans for the future? Do you look ahead? You know, what do you consider yourself? You mentioned earlier you'd be happy to do CodePen until you retire, kind of thing.
Yeah. Die.
Is
I
that
the word
is that
use.
The way?
Die.
Oh, die. Sorry.
Yeah.
So what's the – do you have plans for the future? How far do you look ahead?
I feel so strongly about CodePen. I'm like, this is a good idea. This is really cool. Yeah. The world needs this. It's not there yet because we have so many ideas that we want to bring to life. But we also have this now 6 or 7 year old app that has a lot of technical debt to it. And there's a lot of users yeah. and there's this app that we need to maintain now. And we haven't – like struck gold on CodePen yet. We haven't hit the perfect vein. We haven't found the perfect marketing angle or the perfect feature set or whatever, like some apps do when they blow up, you know? Like, I have to imagine Notion is doing super well, you know? Like, it came out of nowhere. It's awesome. They have good pricing for teams and stuff. They're not, you know, I just feel like they're probably doing great. I haven't looked at their books or whatever. They struck gold in a way that I haven't been able to do yet, and I'm madly jealous of you know? Yeah. And I feel like it's still possible at CodePen. We have the ideas that seem like a gold vein to me, but are slow to get there because, you know, we're not willing to. You know what I mean? We have to be careful with our business at this point. It's not green field anymore. So I am really excited about that. And I don't care how long it takes. As long as we're doing okay, like, I'd like to just keep at that, you know, and then hopefully fight the fights and keep the battle going and make a little bit more money and hire a little bit more people and hopefully hit one of those veins so that we can grow up. Because it's a good idea. I feel really strongly about CodePen. I need to see
now
this thing through.
That's really interesting, mine, because a lot of people that are full of ideas, as you are, who are very entrepreneurial, as you are, get bored. You know, I would be an example of that.
Yeah.
You know, to work on the same app for 7 years, whatever it is, I'd be beginning to reach the point of going, what's next?
Yeah.
That's not you, from the sounds of it. You actually get a joy out of maturing and growing and pushing.
It's just a product of your own experiences, though, to some degree. I'm like that because that's the only way it's ever worked for me. Like, anything I walked away from earlier, it didn't go well. And anything I stuck out, it did go well. So I've learned that, hey, sticking it out tends to work. You know, sticking it out on CSS Tricks when nobody was reading worked. You know, sticking it out at CodePen has grown it from something that people now think of it as, like, you know, in the early days, we were looking at competition and be like, why would you trust us? We're new. And now we're not new anymore, and we've built that trust. So now people, I think there's some part of the CodePen brand that's like, of course I'm willing to use CodePen and put it on my blog and use these tools because they're clearly not going anywhere. And hopefully I can look you in your eye like I'm doing on this podcast, watch this video, and say, CodePen is, you can trust us. We're here for you. I'm going to work on this thing forever and take care of you as users of this site. But we still need to hit that feature set just right. So I'm just excited.
It's so good to see the enthusiasm still there. That's really good to see and really encouraging. Wow, that was absolutely brilliant, Chris. I had all these other things we were going to do on the show, but I'm not going to do any of them now. Marcus, you're postponed till next week.
Am I? Oh. Okay, cool.
Did you even know you were going to do a thought for the day?
I did, but I was struggling with how on earth am I going to follow the one I did last week.
Which was amazing.
You're just pounding that joke through this episode. Good job.
We really are. We don't know when to let go.
Really appreciate it.
So we'll, because I think that's what we've covered has been really, really valuable, and so it's good to be a bit flexible.
Yes.
But I do want to talk about the second sponsor, because this sponsor is sponsoring the whole season of the show. Ooh. They're really doubling down with us, and I always really value people that do that. In last week's show, In last week's show, when we were talking about the Digital Project Manager, we were talking about the challenges of managing projects. We haven't recorded that yet, but I will be, right? And I introduced you last week to this thing called Mastering Digital Project Management, right? Which is an 100% online course that you can run, right? Time zone agnostic, take this course anytime you want. It is a crafted course for digital project managers. If you're running projects, you want to check this out. It's got over 40 modules to complete, over 15 hours worth of material to do, right? So it's a 7-week scheduled with different things you do every week. Although it's time zone agnostic, you're all kind of working through the stuff as a class together, right? At the end of it, you're going to end up with some certification. So it's great from a professional development point of view. And a really useful course for anybody that's having to do any kind of project management, because most of us don't have, you know, that kind of official training with project management. We're making it up as we go along. I know I am. So you can work through this course, right? It consists of video lessons, right? Everything you'd expect from essential project management theory for managing digital projects, all the kind of stuff you know. You get assignments, which are both practical hands-on learning. All of those assignments are peer-reviewed. And you've also got some instructor-reviewed assignments as well. There are panel discussions you can take part in where you can talk with your tutor. So this isn't like a Skillshare course or something like this. This is a proper course. And there's a community class via Slack where you can talk with other class members, right? They also give you templates that you can work with. There's loads of materials that you can work with. If you fancy giving this a go, the next course starts on the 4th of February, so it's not long. So, and there are limited spots. It's not, you know, each class has got a limited number of people, because otherwise it becomes unmanageable. So if you fancy giving that a go, go to thedigitalprojectmanager.com/BoagWorld. Really, really interesting. Great way of improving your project management skills, which I think we all need, let's be honest. Marcus, Chris, first of all, you know everything there is to know about digital. I've seen you manage digital projects, Marcus.
I'm better now. I know what happens. I've had to be, especially lately. That's my little moan. But yeah. That's actually true. The more you've got on, the more efficient you become. I think wise words for this week.
There you go. That could be your thought for the day.
Yeah, it is. There you go.
So we have to, as tradition dictates, end with a bad joke, Chris. I'm sorry about this,
yay.
But it's a part of our show.
Okay.
Go on.
in case the UK is ever invaded by unfriendly forces, I've got a pop art painting on my living room wall that hides a secret panic room. I call it my handy Warhol.
Oh, God!
That's quite good. That come is, on.
That is a good one. Where did you get that one from?
It Who was gave from you that? Paul, of course.
Oh, that is brilliant. I love that one. That's the best one for a long time, actually.
You have to start with a good one, don't you?
Yeah, which says something about the level of the jokes, doesn't it, really? Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Chris, for joining us on the show. And thank you, everybody, who joined us live in the chat room. That about wraps it up for this week's show. Next week, we have Vitaly Friedman joining us, founder of Smashing Magazine, to find out what it is that he does all day. But until then, thanks for watching and goodbye.
Or listening even.
Goodbye.
Or listening even. Well, he's watching if they're in the chat room, and that's good enough.
It's a pleasure, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.